Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I am so excited to have Amy Walsh back on the show. She designs for Blue Underground Studios. She has new fabric lines. She has designs. She's co-teaching the Craft Seed Block of the Month for 2015. And she also tells me she has a tip for us. So I'm really excited about that. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Pat.
So, Amy, first tell people a little bit about the type of quilts you like to make.
I like to make very simple, straightforward patterns that allow the fabric to speak. And without, it kind of happened without me even knowing it. I started making them before I started designing patterns, because what drew me to quilting was the love of color and the fabrics.
I think, fabric really draws a lot of us, doesn't it?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
But I love anything with a pattern. I mean, I even collect, I have like scraps of wrapping paper, I'm embarrassed to say. I just really like patterned things.
I actually have wrapping paper too. That's like,
you know how it is?
Yeah.
It's just, there's something about repetitive pattern that is just so pleasing to the eye.
You know, that's, I think, what I really like about your work is the way that you do that repetitive pattern, but it's, They're not untraditional blocks. They are traditional blocks, but you put them, the colors you put them, how you set them, just makes things feel different. And I think it's that pattern. How do you go about designing a quilt?
There's kind of a couple of different ways that it happens. Sometimes I see a possible block design in something in my surroundings, maybe in the windows of a building, or in a pattern on a chair or something, or the way some wood is carved. And then I'll go sketch it out and see if it looks good repeated. And if so, how will I repeat it? You know, will I just do it straight, or maybe a brick pattern, or, you know, there's a lot of different choices. The other way that it can happen for me is if I'm looking at some fabric that I absolutely love, like let's say a large floral print, mm-hmm. and I just want to not cut it up as much, then I will try and design a quilt that cuts it up but still allows it to be seen a lot. So that's how, for example, my quilt Sparkly Square, that was actually one of my second patterns. Mm-hmm. And the way that happened is because I really wanted to see as much of the fabric as possible. So the finished blocks are something like 14 inches.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would show you a lot of nice fabric for those really large prints that are out there now.
Yes, and we're so lucky today as quilters. I remember when I began quilting, I would go to the store with my mother, mm-hmm. and there was really limited selection in terms of fabric. I mean, we're very fortunate now.
It is so true, and it ebbs and flows. Like right now, the large prints are easily available, and they're addicting, aren't they?
Yes, they are so addicting. And if you have, yes, you just keep wanting more. And what's a big enough piece? For me,
right.
Sometimes it has to be a yard even of multiple prints.
Oh, I know. It's like, you know, just ring me up. Don't let me, I don't even want to see it. Here's the card.
Don't look until the end.
That's right. Now, you have some fabric lines coming out that I'm really excited about. Would you tell me a little bit about how they happened?
Absolutely. I was, doing some business with Troy Fabrics out here in Chicago. And I had been talking to Dorothy Troy, you know, and talking about our patterns. Mm-hmm. And she was nice enough to invite us to design some fabrics. I love designing for her because she kind of really allows for a lot of freedom of expression and freedom of creativity. The whole way this started was basically with color.
Ah.
So the way I created the artwork for the fabric was using pastels, which was really neat because it allowed me to really get some pure colors that I was looking for. I had actually just recently been to the Chicago Art Institute and had seen a traveling impressionist exhibit. And it really, the colors of these paintings really struck me. And I literally came home and started doing these, you know, big sheets of pastel colors. So, and I think they turned out really well.
So when you did pastels, I mean, were you using chalk or paint?
Yes.
What were you?
Yes, they're not pastel colors. I mean, I was using chalk pastels.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Because so the actual fabrics are a little more richer, aren't they?
Yes, they're pretty bright. And I was trying to, it was also such a lesson about color because I was trying to reach a certain degree of saturation. Mm-hmm. So it was really a lesson about color. You know, I started mostly with just basic cream color, like artist paper, you know, like a natural color. And it was a real lesson to see how the colors would overlay on the cream and then how they would lay over each other. So it is a
whole different thing, isn't it, to design fabric versus a quilt?
Yes, it's such a privilege. And I could not contain myself when I started making quilts out of patterns that I had designed with fabric I had designed. It was a little bit of a jump up and down moment, but it was almost surreal when I brought home the samples and started cutting it up. I remember when I first started designing patterns, I thought, oh my goodness, if I ever could have a fabric line, that would just be amazing. So it was really a kind of a full circle moment for me.
Yeah, I know. And then you get your little name on the edge. It's so fun.
Yeah.
It's like,
yes, it really is. It's such a treat to see. And I have some yardage right now in my studio that I'm getting ready to cut up and put on my online shop. So it really is just such a treat.
Now, we're talking about color here. So I think it's a good point for you to tell me a little bit about the color wheel, because you're one of these artists and quilters who really likes the color wheel. How do you use it?
I use it all the time. And I didn't even realize I was going to. I took a quilting class with actually one of our designers, Connie Pomering, and she recommended that every quilter have a color wheel in their stash. And I bought it kind of, you know, that's, you know, when you're in a quilting class, you just kind of want all the supplies.
Right.
And I really, to be honest, when I started, I didn't think I was going to use it. However, I started using it all the time just to reference, first of all, if I'm looking for something that's high contrast, and I'm trying to create that, let's say, with complementary colors. I will look at it all the time just to double check as a reference. But the other thing I use it for is a resource for color inspiration when I'm working on different quilts. And it's just kind of this little, you know, $7 or $8 tool in your studio that can just really be indispensable. You don't even realize till you start using it.
You know, I really should attempt it because I've not really used it, and I like the fact that you said that you reference it, is that so you're pulling out your fabric and then your color wheel is there to sort of help you guide to like intensity of color or maybe shading.
It can do both. It can also help you guide, like let's say you're working with primarily red and you just want something to give a little bit of a spark, something unexpected in your quilt, you can just kind of glance at the color wheel. And if you look at what's across from red, and it doesn't need to necessarily be directly across, of course, that would be green. But if you look at the whole other side of the color wheel, you can throw something in like, you know, an aqua, and it can just change the entire look of your quilt.
Oh, okay. So I know there must be one here somewhere that's in my house.
I will send you one.
Okay.
It's really a neat thing to do. I have the privilege also this year of working, I'm actually teaching art to some junior high kids, and I'm working closely, of course, with the head of the art department at our school, and she has the color wheel all over. So I've been working at the school for a few years, and I've kind of also had this idea reinforced by her. She said everyone needs a color wheel up, so I've had that reinforced.
That is cool. So are you going to have the kids that you're teaching do any quilting?
Yes. This is the best part of, I can't even believe this situation. The entire year of this. It's seventh grade art. It is based on geometry and color and fiber. Hmm. So the second semester was already written in that the girls would make a hand quilted block.
Wow.
So I'm going to be, yeah, this is how I learned sewing actually from my grandmother and my mother. I began with hand piecing, you know, the alternate blocks were all muslin all the time. And so we're actually going to be, I'm going to bring in some templates. We're going to be tracing them and doing some hand sewing.
Yay. So you haven't started that yet because the school right now we're talking the school year hasn't been in progress for very long.
Right. My first class is actually tomorrow and we're beginning the unit with, it's a unit on geometry where you look at line and you use a compass to make circles, which would actually be really neat for quilting patterns.
Yes.
And then we look at color and the use of symmetry and contrast.
Perfect. Perfect. I'll have to have you come back another time and tell us how it went, because I think it'd be interesting to hear. So we have about a minute left. Can you tell me a little bit about your online Craftsy course?
Yes, we actually did that for Michael Miller. And Michael Miller had a new line of boutiques. They wanted to focus on color theory. So it is a block of the month, but it's a learning block of the month. So every month you learn a different color palette. So we did an analogous. We did complementary. We did like split complementary. So we chose a different kind of preordained color palette for each block so that you would learn, you'll learn technique too, but the big thing that you learn is about color, and it just takes it to another level when you're actually doing the exercise. It's one thing to just read about color theory, but when you're actually doing the exercise, I think you internalize it on a different level.
And this is a free workshop.
Correct. The class is free. It is nothing to sign up, and all the handouts and the patterns come when you sign up for the class. They're all downloadable.
Amy, this has been so much fun. I've learned so much. I'm inspired to play with the color wheel.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I want everybody to go out and visit you at blueundergroundstudios.com, and they can see your quilts and your fabric lines, your new fabric lines, and look for those. Are they in the store now?
Yes, actually, they began shipping in July.
Perfect, perfect. Thanks so much, Amy.
Thank you, Pat. Have a great day.
We'll be right back after the break with American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. See you in a minute.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest
to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I am your host, Pat Sloan. I have this awesome book that I'm holding right now by Roderick Kirchhoff, who is an author, a quilt collector. He was a dealer first, a quilt dealer. He has collected this and put together this book of really wonderful, unconventional quilts, which are the kind that speak to me. I like the ones that are a little different, a little quirky, and this book is full of them, and he's documented them and is here to tell me about it. Welcome to the show, Roderick.
Thank you, Pat. It's great to be back with you. It's always fun to talk with you.
Oh, you know, someday I have to meet you in person. I don't think we've met in person yet, but
no, we haven't.
We chat on Facebook, so you need to come to the market so I can meet you.
Are you coming to American Quilt Study Group or Quilters Take Manhattan?
No, not this year. I'm teaching somewhere else.
Well, one of these days, our paths will cross.
They will. They will. Tell me how you decided. You were first a antiques dealer, a quilt dealer for many years, and then you transitioned into collecting. What did you first start to collect?
What or when?
Well, what? Like of the quilts. Did you have a particular style of quilt that you were started with your own personal collection?
Well, I really started collecting this style, this improvisational, quirky, funky, you know, all the words get used to describe somebody. I was just doing a talk for the San Francisco Quilt Guild this week, and somebody came up to me and said, "Oh, I'm so glad that somebody else loves the ugly quilt."
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'm not sure that I would call them ugly, but I can understand how some people might, who love the perfect piece and applique and all of that, that these might come across. But they are just, they're so dynamic and soulful, and they just speak to me and kind of always have. When Michael Kyle and I were dealers, actually our business card had one of these kind of very quirky quilts on it that was pretty unusual at the time, because we were dealing in mostly really perfectly made, beautiful condition, just, you know, exquisite quilts. But we personally liked them. I always have. And, you know, found at that point it was generally corporations that were more interested in these little funkier ones because they saw them as the art that they are. So I actually first started buying, I bought three quilts in 1998 when I was out on a talk, a lecture, that I just immediately came home and put them away. Because I guess I wasn't quite ready. And then it wasn't until 2004 that I bought my first quilt like this on eBay. And I knew that I wanted to collect quilts that appealed to my eye, that had these, you know, quirky things about them that weren't perfect, primarily pieced quilts and primarily printed fabrics, because I love printed fabric. Kind of the more the better.
Some of them are wild. They are just wildly exuberant.
Yes.
Now, have you met some of the people? I know you couldn't have met everybody, but have you met some of the people who made the quilts that you've collected?
No, I've not met any of them. Most of them came to me without names. They came as anonymous, which initially really surprised me, because I thought in this day and age, people would be holding on to, you know, the quilt history and the names of the makers, and I discovered that that isn't necessarily the case. And I think there's a variety of reasons why quilts will pass out of a family and the maker's name won't come along with it. I do have some names that were given to me. it's a challenge in this day and age to document and actually put that person's name to it, or that, you know, where they lived and all of that. I thought it would be much easier with the internet, but most counties and states have really restricted the access to those documents and documentation. So Ancestry.com and what's the other one? Sometimes we'll offer things where, you know, you get some information, but if it's African American, I think then that becomes more challenging. Those records weren't as well kept. And so it's definitely a challenge. I'm hoping that somebody wants to take on that project and either help me or take it on themselves of actually trying to piece names that were given to me and match them, match the records of where they lived, their births, their deaths, and put them to the quilts. But
it's,
I'm not a believer.
It really tells for all of us to be documenting, or at least putting, you know, some information on a label so that down the road somebody else like you would be able to know. Is there a quilt in here that in this book that you put together, something that just made your heart race when you first saw it? Can you describe one?
A lot of them.
I know.
And it's hard to pick one, but I did. There are a couple that come to mind. One is the unique yo-yo quilt on page 114 and 115. That was a later acquisition. You know, I have almost 200 quilts and 100 tops. At some point, you think, wait a minute, do I need any more? But Mark French, a wonderful dealer in Ohio, said, I've got a great yo-yo quilt. And yo-yo, the pattern, has never been a real favorite of mine. I don't know about you, if you like it or not.
Well, they have to be unique, I think. And,
yeah,
and that
and
one is.
This one's appliqued, so it has a backing. Mm-hmm. And then just the color arrangement, the way she created a big circle with her patterning of these small yo-yo circles. I was hoping when it came, I wouldn't like it, and I could say, no, I don't want it. Well, I hung it on the wall, and it just was amazing. And then on the back, she signed her name, her address, the year, 1964, and her age, 83.
Oh, perfect.
Now, as I said, I don't know whether she made this when she was 83. Someone at the Quilt Guild said that was probably how old she was when she finished it,
right?
Because there are hundreds, maybe thousands, of these round yo-yo pieces appliqued to it. But it's just a brilliant, brilliant piece. And
now, I asked you before we talked if you had also collected any clothing, because the era of the book is 1950 to 2000. And I started, you know, quilting in the very last part of that. And quilted clothing was, you know, the bomb. You had to have an outfit to go to the show. Like a motorcyclist would wear their motorcycle gear. We had quilt gear. You have collected at least a piece or two, right?
Well, I sent you a picture of this polyester double knit pieced little jacket that somebody posted on Facebook. I thought, that's pretty wonderful. It reminded me of some of my quilts. Went to eBay and, I'll start. I don't know if I'm going to start a new collection. A few months later, a similar polyester double knit dress got posted on Facebook that was on eBay. I watched it. I let Victoria Findlay Wolf, do you know her? Wonderful quilt maker. Lives in New York. I thought, this is perfect for her. And she did buy it. It was like, I'm not sure that I need to start a whole other collection. But this little jacket, you know, handmade. Again, have no idea who made it. But just those vibrant, brilliant colors of the polyester double knit was just kind of too good to pass up.
Yeah. So, are a lot of the pieces polyester in your collection?
I certainly there is a good selection of them. I've not done a count of, mm-hmm. of how many, but they're just, when they're good, they are so good. The color is so bright. Again, when I show quilts to quilt guilds and other groups, often when I say, well, now here's a polyester double knit, there's a groan
right,
that goes
right.
through the crowd. But then when you show it, mm-hmm. they just like, it's like, ooh, and ah, and in some yeah. cases, people have even applauded. So I think it's gotten people to rethink their hatred of polyester double knit. I think it's because so many people wore it and
right.
hated how it felt. I never had the good fortune of wearing anything that was made a polyester double knit.
Lucky you. Lucky you. There's a couple pieces. We only have like about a minute, but there's a couple pieces okay. that have clothing. There's an overall quilt. There's one with pockets. What do you think about those?
I think they're wonderful when the quilt maker, you know, took and either cut up, and in the one case, the overalls quilt, which is in Eli Leon's collection, which is just fabulous. But then the denim quilts where you see the outline of the pockets, mm-hmm. You know, they cut up the clothing that they were wearing and made those into their quilts, and kind of these everyday objects becoming another everyday and yeah. used object.
And do you think they use, like, the overall quilt? I mean, literally, the overalls are there, like it's the center
know,
of the whole quilt.
I know. I don't know whether that was ever really slept under. It might have been. I think it's a wonderful imagery of somebody laying underneath that quilt of whether it was their overalls or whose
right.
overalls those might have been, but that they're sleeping under them. Mm-hmm.
Just spectacular. So this has been fun. Just fabulous to introduce people to your new book, Unconventional and Unexpected, American Quilts Below the Radar by Roderick Kirchhoff. And your website is RoderickKirchhoff.com. People can find, they can hire you to come and talk, right?
Absolutely. I would love to do that and enjoy that, speaking with guilds and other groups that are interested in art and quilts and just anything that's of speaks to things that were used by people every day, and then just in the beauty and the art that really is held within those objects. That's the thing that excites and intrigues me. So,
well, Roderick, thank you so much for being
thank
here.
Thank you, Pat. As I said, it's always fun, and I'm really excited about this new book, and I think others will be as well.
This has been great. I'd like all of you to hang on there. We'll be right back after the break with American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. If you're working on more than one quilt project at a time and have limited storage space, stash each ongoing project in a large white gift box, label the ends, and stack the boxes in your closet.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Nancy Mahoney is joining me every month, and we're doing sort of a more detailed chat on different aspects of quilt making, and doing this all of 2014. And we're really excited because we both love applique, and we've decided today is applique day. So thanks for being here, Nancy.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay, so did you try applique right away when you started making quilts?
You know, I did, actually. And way back when the applique fusible products were not what they are today, I did hand applique to start with, and then I started using these fusible products. And I actually have a quilt top that I've never finished. It's all fused and ready to go, but it is so stiff, I don't think I could actually get a needle through it.
So I know. I actually avoided it for a while. I was in avoidance. So I came to it a little bit later. There was an applique on my sampler, my beginning sampler, but I didn't do that block. I just skipped it.
I loved hand applique, and I still do. It's just that number one, I don't have time. And, you know, number two is it's more involved. There's a process that you have to learn with it, and I just don't have time to do it anymore.
Yeah, it's a huge it's a learning thing. You have to know, and you have to know what fits for you. And I think that's what we're going to do today. Nancy and I are going to go back and forth and go through different types of applique that are available, because there's many types. And if you want to do it and you've tried one and it hasn't worked, you just need to try another, because there might be one that does. So we're going to go first with machine work, because if you're a piecer now, you want to use your machine, and there's lots of ways to do that. But there's several different ways. So Nancy, why don't you start off with a very traditional satin stitch? What is that about?
Well, a satin stitch is simply a zigzag stitch, but you're lowering the stitch width on your machine. And the length can be what it normally is set at, but the stitch width, you're making it so that the stitches are much closer together. I guess actually that's your length. But you're making it so that your stitches are much closer together, so that when you're doing your zigzag, it's just almost a solid stitch.
Right, so it looks like beading almost when it's done really well.
Right, and you really need to use a stabilizer when you're mm-hmm. doing a satin stitch. And a stabilizer you put on the wrong side of the fabric, and then you have your applique on the right side, and then you're doing your satin stitch over the top of that.
And it's like what you would see on a lot of T-shirts and stuff that you might purchase at a store, you know, when
Correct.
They have a shape on it. It's the outline.
It's the outline. Yeah.
I'm going to talk about the blanket stitch, doing fusible with the blanket stitch. Let's do the several stitches, Nancy, and then we'll talk about the products used
sure.
for fusible. So blanket stitch is where you find this stitch on your machine, and that is what holds the applique down versus like the satin stitch. And the blanket stitch, I find most people do not need to stabilize it. It's more open, so it's not tugging into the machine. So you eliminate a stabilizing step for most people. And that's my go-to stitch for machine work. That's what I really like. I think it adds interest to the side of the shape, even if I match the thread color. And it's very forgiving, easy to learn. I think it's easy to learn. But a lot of people, Nancy, like to use a zigzag, or their machine doesn't have a blanket stitch.
That's right. Yeah. So you'll use a zigzag. Blanket stitch is my go-to as well. Mm-hmm. But you can use a zigzag stitch. But I would recommend using a more open stitch instead of mm-hmm. a really closed stitch like you would for a blanket stitch. And you can do it narrower so that it's not, it doesn't create such a heavy look around the appliques.
Right. And you don't want to get them too close that they look like you were trying to do a satin stitch but
Correct.
Didn't do it well. Right.
Right. Right.
Now, also, right now, I'm seeing in the past year or so, a couple years, that people are doing fusible applique and stitching it down with a straight stitch. So they generally will match the thread color and just go like a fraction onto the shape. Let's say it's a circle, and they're just like an eighth of an inch into the circle, and they're just outlining around it with this straight stitch. So you might try that because everybody has a straight stitch on their machine. You can literally do that with a featherweight. And it's an option that you might like. So Nancy, what are some of the what are some of the fusibles that you like to use?
Well, I like to use Steam-A-Seam. And Steam-A-Seam comes in two different weights. And so it has a regular weight and it has a lightweight. And it also comes as regular Steam-A-Seam and it comes as Steam-A-Seam 2. And really, for me, the difference is one has paper on one side and Steam-A-Seam 2 has paper on the two sides. But that's not really why they call it 2. They call it Steam-A-Seam 2 because it has these temporary adhesive qualities on both sides of the fusible, which means that you draw your shape on the one side, you remove mm-hmm. one piece of paper, and you draw the shape on the one side, you cut out your shape, and you remove the one piece of paper, and then you can temporarily adhere it to your whatever fabric you're going to use as your applique fabric. And then when you cut out that shape, you know, of course you would iron it, and then you cut out your shape on the line, you can then remove the second piece of paper and you can stick it on your background and it will adhere to your background temporarily. And so you can reposition it and you could like put it on your wall and say, well, that looks good, or I need to rearrange my applique shapes a little bit. Mm-hmm. And when you're satisfied with the way they're arranged, then you can fuse it in place.
Yeah, and because that tackiness lets you kind of holds the shape, especially with little shapes. It's really nice when you're full fusible.
Unfortunately, they're having some production problems right at the moment, so I know it's hard for people to get. And that has to do with the quality of the paper, from what I understand. But they're working on it, and eventually it will be available again to us. So.
Mm-hmm. And you have another product that you like to use.
I do. I like to use Misty Fuse. When I'm not going to use Steam-A-Seam, I use Misty Fuse. And Misty Fuse is a paperless product, and so it's kind of confusing for some people to use. But what I do with it is I use parchment paper. And they recommend using Reynolds parchment paper because of the finish on the parchment paper. And it will not adhere to the Misty Fuse. So I will put a piece of parchment paper on my ironing surface because I want to protect my ironing surface. Then mm-hmm. I put my fabric wrong side up, put my piece of Misty Fuse on top of that, and then put another piece of parchment paper on top of the Misty Fuse and press it. So now I've adhered the Misty Fuse to the wrong side of my fabric. I trace my shapes onto freezer paper and then fuse them to the right side of my fabric and cut mm-hmm. them out. So it really means I don't have to do as much tracing. And when I have things with a lot of tiny shapes, I trace mm-hmm. one master copy onto freezer paper, and then I make more copies, and I just don't have to trace as many shapes.
Okay. That's cool. Well, I like to use the Heat and Bond, which is ThermoWeb's products, a Heat and Bond Light or Heat and Bond Feather Light. The Feather Light is a newer product, and it is a thinner layer of adhesive. So if you like to do full fusible, which you might be doing because you have a lot of small pieces or you don't want to cut out the centers, it has a thinner layer of adhesive. The Heat and Bond Light is their traditional one. I've used it forever. It's really forgiving. Everybody can use it. I teach with it all the time. I like to, it's not tacky, so it doesn't have that aspect. But it also, they have sheets now that you can run through your printer. So if you're doing a lot of, have digital patterns, you can get the tracing part step eliminated by running it through your inkjet. And then, you know, it's a great product for people starting out, and it's really simple. You just open it up, trace, and go. So it's easy to handle. Nancy, I thought we'd go ahead and just do some go into the hand applique now, because I want to be sure we sort of touch on everything.
Okay.
Do you do any hand applique right now?
I do a little bit. Once in a while, mm-hmm. I'll do something, particularly if I want to have I do a turned edge that I use a no-melt Mylar template, and I'll use that to cut my shapes, and I add a seam allowance around it. I then paint starch in that seam allowance and then press the fabric over the template so that I've prepared my applique shape. And if I'm traveling,
then I can get those all glue basted in place, and I can take them with me, and I can hand applique them. So
yeah,
that's one way I do hand applique.
There's a huge number of types of prepared under edges, because you can also do it with freezer paper.
Correct.
On the back. And are there any other products that people are using to get the edges turned under?
Some people like to do, and it can really be either hand applique or machined applique. And that's what mm-hmm. I can do with the starch method, is either hand applique or I can do it machine. But you can also do it with an interfacing where there's fusible on one side of the interfacing. And you trace whatever shape you're doing, you trace it on the interfacing, and you put the, let me see if I have to get this correct, because it depends on which way you're going with your interfacing, so that you're putting it, I think you're putting it fusible side to the right side of the fabric, and you sew around the shape, and then you make a slit in the center of the interfacing, and you turn your shape so that it's right side out, and so you have the right side of the fabric on one side, and you have the fusible on the other side, and then you can you adhere it in place, and then you could either machine stitch it or you could hand stitch it. And that gives you a turned edge as well.
Yeah, that's really fun. We have like about a minute, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to just talk about the applique where you do not prepare the edges under before you go. And the most common word that people hear is needle turn applique.
Yeah.
And I also call it finger turn, because I use my finger a whole lot more than I use the needle. So in that method, I will draw the line physically on the front of the fabric and then turn so the line's turned under as I go and stitch. But some people like to put freezer paper on top so that they have that, so they don't have to draw on their fabric. They might have like a circle, and then they turn under around it and use it as the guide. And another method is called back basting. It's a little complicated to actually explain on the radio, but back basting is you're drawing the images, you're sort of stitching the fabric in shape, and then clipping that basting stitch and then turning as you go. So the basting stitch would be your line. It's a much more involved method because you have to trace the entire pattern onto your background. But a lot of people love it. It gives them the look they want. It's very portable. We have like 30 seconds, Nancy. Which one would you recommend people try first?
I would say try fusible applique. Most people are very successful with that, and with the new fusible products that are available today and the different ways that you can do a method you can do, most people are very successful. And where they have shied away from applique, they embrace that type of method and really then get the results they want.
I totally agree. Try fusible first. Nancy, this has been so much fun. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm looking forward to talking to you next month.
Okay. We'll be right back with American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once fabric pieces have been pressed, let them cool in place before moving them. It prevents distortion of bias edges.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I am so delighted to be chatting with Nikki Ovitt. She is a fabric designer, and her line of fabric is called Homestead. And I was just captivated by the story she has about creating this. She is an artist, and taking her drawings and putting them on fabric is very exciting. Her look is very exciting. So Nikki's going to tell us all about the process and what she does and about a little bit about herself. So thanks for being here, Nikki.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Pat.
You know, tell us a little bit about your creative background, because it's very deep. You've done a lot of work in different industries.
Yeah, I was counting it up, and I've been a graphic designer and illustrator for about 29 years now, which blows me away. And in that time, I've gotten to use those skills in so many different industries, the last one being manufacturing. So I was working for a company that manufactured accessories and apparel for private label brands. So there is where I kind of learned how to design for fabric, linings for, you know, prints for linings that are going in bags and hats and graphics for the outside of things. So
It's different, isn't it, to look at like the repeats for fabric than it is for something that you're putting like on a bowl.
Yes. Yes. We did home accessories as well, but not as much. We did mostly soft goods.
Mm-hmm. So where might somebody have seen a lining that you drew?
What's interesting about that work is a lot of the designs needed to be in the most popular style of illustration that was out there. So a lot of brands copy each other. Their client list, I can't really name, but think of any lifestyle brand for juniors, and they were probably doing a presentation to them. And we had buy-in about 30% of the time, which is pretty high. You know, we'd make a 40-page presentation, and maybe 10 of those items would get manufactured to go forward.
Cool.
So it was really fun work. It was like throwing up a bunch of cool stuff and seeing what happens.
And then going into the store and peeking in all the bags. See?
Oh, yeah. No, that's really fun. The salespeople would send us pictures of what was in the store. And yeah, it's neat to see it on the showroom and what finalized.
Tell me a little bit about your artwork, because the artwork that you're doing for Clothworks for your Homestead fabric line is your hand. It's your drawings. Can you describe that?
I'm glad you see the difference.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's it's a pen and ink technique, and I've been doing it for years, and I kind of took that job right at the time I should have been probably promoting that work a lot more in the illustration arena, but it was kind of put on hold for a while, and it was interesting that, you know, when I quit working there 3 years ago, I just picked a style right back up where I left off. Mm. And it feels like it speaks to me. It's my natural style of a blobby kind of uneven line made with crow quill pen. And it's what I like to do the most. You know, I can do graphics for Speedo, which is one of my freelance clients currently, but it's always in a style that's not my natural look. Mm-hmm. It's copying another style.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That is what I really like about the Homestead collection.
The work style and then your personal style, that can be very different for so many artists.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, you yourself are not a quilter yet, but... Yet, I always have to add that when I talk to people who haven't started yet, but are jumping into the arena of the quilt world. But you have quilts in your family. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, I have, you know, I've been blessed to have a lot of really talented fiber people in my family, and on both sides of my family, quilts were my father's. Family was from Illinois, and they had a big, long history of needing really warm quilts. So I have a bunch of beautiful, crazy quilts. Mm. Maybe not a bunch, more like three. I won't exaggerate. But, you know, three gorgeous, crazy quilts from wool, tweed, kind of, obviously they were cut up from the material they had at hand. You know, mm-hmm. they were not for pretty. They were to put on the bed and keep warm.
Right. Right.
And then on my mother's side, my grandmother who just died was a quilter from way back, and her kind of signature look was these denim quilts made from blue jeans.
Mm.
So I have actually we just had a photo shoot here at my house, and there'll be a picture of one of her quilts on my bed coming out in Molly Makes Magazine, and I love that quilt. I mean, it's mm-hmm. just different blues and indigos in squares with a hint of some red yarn to tie it off. I'm not even sure what that's called. And
yeah,
she'd always put a really pretty backing.
Quilts. Yeah. Oh, neat. And those are heavy, those denim quilts.
Extremely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
That's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah, very heavy. Build your muscles. Your Lyon Homestead is when we started writing and you told me the story behind it, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. And so I'd love to hear how the idea for the line came about, because everybody designs fabric in such a personal way and mm-hmm. the stories are so personal, and yours actually started via a challenge.
Yeah. The Printed Bolt is a website I found soon after I had left my job, and I think they started in 2010. So they had run a contest, and it's two really young, talented quilters who met at the University of Nebraska, and they were going to school at the International Quilt Study Center and Museum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they met there and got really jazzed and created this challenge for designers, and I entered the second year, and it was a fantastic experience. I loved following it the first year, and their challenges were so interesting, and I didn't know where they got the ideas, but each one, I kept thinking, I want to do that. Oh, mm-hmm. oh, that's a good theme. Yeah, let's do that one. So the Homestead came from their challenge, I think, yeah, it was round two of this contest. And they chose 10 international designers to compete, and I was one of them. So round two, the theme was tools of the trade. And, you know, I was coming back from Southern California with my husband when I got the email about what the theme would be, and we started brainstorming it and just talking about, he's great about listening to this stuff. And he's a contractor, so, you know, he uses tools day in and day out, and of course, that would be kind of an obvious solution.
Mm-hmm.
But as a graphic designer, I'm always looking for, well, what's a twist? You know, what's the mm-hmm. what's a different theme that this could go off on? And graphically and from an illustration standpoint, there are tons of other wonderful things that could be illustrated. You know, on my list, I had glass blowing or a shoe cobbler, or, you know, just really getting to explore maybe tools that I didn't know about too,
mm-hmm.
which was interesting to me. And I ended up hitting on, I looked up in the thesaurus, you know, tool and I think tools and trade. And they both had a little bit that said manual labor in there. I kept thinking, what is the hardest manual labor there is? And I just kept going back to women's work
mm-hmm.
and how hard women work, and modern women or women from early pioneer days, you know, it's a juggle, and it's
mm-hmm.
just, you know, it's not a contest or anything, but I just, maybe as a working mom and somebody who's constantly, you know, looking to continue to strive to do my own work and thinking about the tools that these women used all day long. You know, it could be a basket to go get the vegetables or hold the baby. It could
mm-hmm.
be the hoe. You know, there's just so many tools that they used in their daily life over and over again, their whole life with tools.
So your main fabric line, you ended up taking lot of these images, some of them sort of old-fashioned, like a spinning wheel and the basket, like you said, for collecting, you know, apples or broccoli from the field. And you sort of toss them, put them on your main print. And I just love your drawings of them.
Thank you.
Now, I was going to say, you did a few other companion prints that pulled colors and whatnot, but can you tell me one of your favorite companion prints that you did?
I really like the medallion, and that was kind of inspired by kitchen fabric. So, you know, maybe in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, there was that, maybe even earlier on linoleum, too, there was a trend towards kitchen items in the design. So there might be crockery, there might be utensils. And one of my mood boards had research of all these beautiful kitchen fabrics.
Oh, that's
so
neat.
There's a medallion print that is pulled out of the main print.
Now, is the line available in the stores yet?
It comes out this fall.
Oh, good.
They're taking orders for it now. It's all new to me, so I love hearing how it works. The salespeople are going to the stores now.
Yes. So it'll be there soon. That'll be soon. Well, Nikki, you know, my favorite print before we wrap it up is I want to tell you the one with the lines and the tiny little stitching on it.
Ticking.
Yes, I love your interpretation of that and how it's very asymmetrical and just sort of feels like me, that particular piece. I really love it.
Oh, that's great to know. Wow.
We're all going to find something special that we love, I know. So tell me where people can find you online.
Well, my portfolio and blog are at nikkiovit.com. And Clothworks has the line up now, and I'm working on a second line for them as we speak.
Wonderful.
I'm on Twitter and all those. There's little buttons at the top of my website. So I do Instagram more than anything.
Well, then I'll see you there.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. Well, Nikki, this has been so wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Very nice to talk to you, and thanks for inviting me.
This has been American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit us at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me at patsloan.com. And we'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.